The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 19 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, details the 1959 season. Dublin, out for revenge for their 55 final defeat, were among the barriers for Kerry. Throughout the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you'll hear each time.
Part 1.
Kerry headed into the 1959 season, coming off the back of three big years of disappointment. In 56, the Kingdom surrendered their Munster crown in a replay to Cork. In 57, there was the infamous one-point semi-final loss to Waterford. 1958 saw Kerry suffer an All-Ireland semi-final defeat to Derry. Silverware found its way to Kerry early in 1959 as the county captured the National League title for the first time since 1932. Sean Murphy says the attitude to the league that season was different to others.
The National League didn't figure on any Kerry plans through the year. They'd almost forgotten about it. I can remember lots of fellas with what I suppose you call an attitude today saying, what? Playing against various teams. Some of them didn't bother turning up. It wasn't important in Kerry. But for some reason, we were revitalised in 1959 and we did win the National League. I was thrilled to win it, and a National League medal was a bit unusual.
Kerry, captained by John Dowling, beat Derry 2-8 to 1-8 in the league final. There was an added bonus for the victors in 59. Kerry, as league champions, were to tour America later that year. Tom Long admits that was a big incentive.
The prize at the end was not so much the medals, but a trip to America. And, you know, a trip to America at that time was worth quite a lot. You know, not like nowadays when it's much cheaper to go to America now, I'm sure, than it was in 58 or 9. It was a great incentive, a lovely carrot, you know, and it was nice to have it in your pocket early on the year. You know, it gave you a bit of, naturally, if you were going out to New York, it would be nice to go as All-Ireland champions. I'm sure that must have been a stimulus.
The pressure was now increased on the Kingdom to go on to win the All-Ireland and make the US tour a success. The Munster campaign began against Tipperary. One season before, the Kingdom robbed the Premier County of a famous victory.
Tip were leading till the closing stages, when a sideline kick by Mick O'Dwyer went through for a goal.
Just four of the All-Ireland winning team of 1955 were to line out against Tip in 59. Cornerback Jerome O'Shea and half-forward Paddy Sheehy were two. One of the others was John Dowling, who had moved from midfield to full forward by now. The fourth was Johnny Cullerty, whose career change was even more remarkable. Cullerty reminisces on how he went from goal-getter to goal-stopper.
In 1955, as a corner forward, just say, like, you know, and then I got on the Munster team, we played in the Railway Cup, like, you know, but I got injured on St. Patrick's Day of 56, and I had to come off, like, you know, I had to have an operation for my knee, like, you know, to the cartilage, like. Now, it's very hard to tell anybody, like, your young man, like, you know, to tell you an operation your knee at that stage was fairly serious. I mean, compared to now, like, if you have a cartilage operation, you have this microsurgery, like, you know, and it's only a small thing, like, you know. But at that stage, no, I remember after the operation, I was in bed for 6 days and it took a long time to recover and the rest of it. So for a while then, like, you know, that I wasn't able to play at all, like, you know, for about 12 months nearly. The next thing then I started to come back again, like, you know, but it throws you back a bit, like, you know, and I was playing with the Kerry Hurlers in goal. Generally, as most of the games then I'd play with the Hurlers, like, you know, in goal. And when I came back with Kerry then, I was kind of playing with the Kerry Juniors out the field in Kinmare one day. Junior must have finally against Cork or something, or the first round, I forget now how it was, about 1957-ish, around that. And then I went up with Kerry seniors. I was a sub again for the forwards. We were playing Galway, and I think it was a Gaelic weekly tournament or something. And at the time, Marcus O'Neill, I know he was busy, he was playing goal with Kerry at the time, and he wasn't available for that game, so they were short the goalie above. So I was put into goal for that game, because I was playing with the Hurlers. And same thing happened in a couple of league games. I don't know what happened, did Marcus retire or what, but he wasn't playing anyway, so I was put into goal for a couple of more league games and I stayed there after that. But the thing about it was, I played with Kerry in goal in the football, and when I was playing with East Kerry, I was playing in Connaught Forward still, and we won four county championships, and I was a Connaught Forward, so I was in goal with Kerry and a forward with the club and East Kerry as well. I was fit enough to play out the field now. I was okay at county championship level now, but I started into goal, and do you know what, I stuck there with the county, and I was left there, and that was the way it worked out anyway, really. So it was the same with the hurlers. Some days I'd play with the hurlers, I'd play out the field, and some days I'd play in goal.
In addition to the aforementioned quartet, the following started against Tip in 1959. Fullback Niall Sheehy of John Mitchell's, cornerback Castle Island's Tim Lyons, a halfback line of Mick Ash, Austin Stacks, mid-Kerry man Kevin Coffey, and Abby Dorney's Moss O'Connell. At midfield were Seamus Murphy and Mick O'Connell of West and South Kerry fame respectively, Dan McAuliffe, North Kerry, and sub in 1955 wore number 10. West Kerry's Tom Long was at 11, the corner forwards were Dave Ganey, Castle Island, and the second of the North Kerry representatives, Jim Brosnan. The Tipperary match was a stroll for the kingdom.
At no time during the hour was Kerry's supremacy challenged, and the home side won without being at any stage extended. The result was a foregone conclusion long before the final whistle.
It took some time, however, for Kerry to demonstrate their superiority on the scoreboard.
Kerry drew first blood when Jim Brosnan, placed by Tom Long, sent over the bar after 7 minutes. Shortly afterwards, misfortune hit the Tipmen. Dan McAuliffe sent in a high shot. The ball was misfielded in the goal mouth by one of the backs, and it shot past Newport into the net for a very lucky Kerry goal. When Tom Long was going through, in the next instant he was fouled. Dan McAuliffe pointed the free. Then John Dowling snapped up a high ball, wheeled and finished over the bar, leaving Kerry 6 points ahead after a quarter of an hour. Mick O'Connell had a left-legged point from a difficult angle. When Dave Geaney was going through, he was fouled. Dan McAuliffe sent the free over the bar. Shortly before the interval, Tip forced a 50. Danaher got this and raised the white flag. Nolan soon followed with another.
Kerry's advantage was 6 points at the turnover, 1-5 to 2 points. Even an early second-half goal for Tip didn't upset Kerry's rhythm.
Tom Long had a quick point. Then Tip roused themselves. Danaher missed in front of the post, but he compensated almost immediately when he crashed through a goal after a great run. Kerry hit back at once, and Paddy Sheehy, Dan McAuliffe free, and Mick O'Connell free added points. Kerry were in control, as O'Connell, Jim Brosnan, Seamus Murphy too, and John Dowling added points.
Kerry outscored Tip 9 points to a goal in that second half to go through to the Munster final on a scoreline of 115 to 1-2. Kerry did not impress, while it was
the worst display I have ever seen from a Tip team, from which great things were expected. Kerry were far the better team in all sections. The attack was below par.
Cork were the Kingdom's opponents in the Munster decider on August 2nd. West Kerry duo Jack Dowling and Sean Murphy were called into the side for the provincial decider at full and half-back respectively. Mick O'Dwyer started on the wing. Niall Sheehy, Mick Ash and Moss O'Connell were the ones omitted. Kerry made a dream start against Cork in the Munster final. The Irish press noted how, even with the strong wind in the first half, Cork took 9 fatal minutes to settle down, and by that time, Kerry had rammed home 2 vital goals and a point. Dan McAuliffe with a free registered Kerry's opening score. That was the first point of 7 for McAuliffe that afternoon. Kerry's opening goal arrived just 7 minutes in, and the second 2 minutes later, both recalled in 1970s publication Years of Glory.
Seamus Murphy cut through, and when his pass found Paddy Sheehy, the left-winger sent a shot dipping under the crossbar for a sensational goal. Kerry struck again almost immediately. Tom Long curled in a great centre, up went John Dowling, and he punched the leather outside him to elusive Dave Geaney, who slammed it past Liam Power in the Cork goal.
Kerry now led by 2-1 to no score. Perhaps too early to say game over, but even at this stage, the Kingdom were in a match-winning position. Cork, though, had other ideas. A goal and a point later, and the Rebels had brought the deficit back to 3 points. Dan McAuliffe pointed 3 frees for Kerry, each one being cancelled out at the other end. Cork tagged on 2 more scores before the break, after which Kerry led by the minimum, 2-4 to 1-6. Kerry blitzed Cork in the opening 10 minutes of the second half. 2 points by Dan McAuliffe, plus further ones by Dave Ganey and Jim Brosnan, had Kerry 5 in front. Kerry 2-8, Cork 1-6. Cork responded to bring the gap down to 3 points, but 6 unanswered points by Kerry put the tie beyond Cork. Cork goaled late on, but that was academic, as Kerry progressed by 2-15 to 2-8. The Irish press felt Kerry had only shown their real power when the need arose, adding that midfielders, the brilliant Mick O'Connell and stylish Seamus Murphy, laid the foundations for victory. After beating old rivals Cork, next up were the Kingdom's arch-rivals Dublin, a chance for Kerry to knock out the reigning champions. The recent merits of the opponents was discussed in the build-up to their clash.
Dublin can still call on 8 of their 1955 team, Kerry 6. In 1958, Kerry went under to Derry 2-6 to 2-5. Kerry won that game everywhere, except on the scoreboard. Dublin defeated Derry in the final, 2-15 to 1-9. This year, Dublin were deemed lucky to draw with Louth and only managed to save the game when two Louth players had to retire injured. Kerry and Dublin met in the Whit Sunday tournament in Killarney on May the 17th. Kerry won 3-6 to 8 points. In that game, Dublin fielded 9 of their regulars, Kerry 10. I regard Cathal O'Leary, Kerry father, Cork mother, as the best footballer in Dublin. Kerry's fielding is superior to anything Dublin met in Leinster. There are a couple of spots in which Kerry will be hard-pressed to hold their own. There are other places which the Kingdom can be expected to dominate. One of these is midfield.
Kerry selector Jackie Lyne was looking for the defence to shore up in the wake of their display and the Munster final win over Cork.
Our backs were shaky on that occasion, and it was really the centre field and forwards who carried the day. But with an improvement in our back sector, we should whip Dublin.
John Barrett reported in the Kerryman newspaper how Dublin were in a frenzy to avenge their final defeat of 1955.
To every Dublin player, next Sunday is the game of his career. This will not be the cocky, overconfident bunch who fell into the trap of 55. They are sure they can do the trick this time, but no, they are in for one heck of a struggle.
Kerry recalled Niall Sheehy at full back for the match with Dublin. He took over from Jack Dowling. Moss O'Connell was reintroduced at left half-back. Mick O'Dwyer moved back to the corner with Tim Lyons dropped. Nowadays, football is seen as a professional game in everything but name. Players are training in some shape or form for pretty much the whole year, be it actual football training or work in the gym. In 1959, it was a much different scenario, as Mick O'Connell remembers.
I remember the Munster final of 59. Prior to the Munster final, it was played in August weekend in 59. Prior to that, the Kerry players weren't gathered together for one single training session. We trained at home and practiced at home. Then 2 weeks after that, the following Sunday week, we played Dublin. We had some practice sessions there. I think that's when Niall Sheehy came on for the first time. It puts in perspective the amount of travelling now and preparation which players are awarded. In those times, the facilities weren't there, but it would be a reckless scandal now if the county team didn't have any training session until the month of August. Those dates, they're imprinted in my mind, and we didn't complain. We just got on with it, and that's it.
Kerry were not to be denied against Dublin. The champions will be dethroned after a titanic struggle between two great rivals. From the first whistle to the last, the tie was in the balance.
First dangerous move came from Dublin. When Freeney was fouled, he pointed the free inside a minute. A minute later, when Farnan was fouled going through, Freeney again pointed the free. Mick O'Connell brought down a high ball and was fouled. Dan McAuliffe opened the scoring with a point, and from a foul on Jim Brosnan 2 minutes later, McAuliffe levelled. In the 10th minute, Whelan put Dublin a point in front. Dublin gave away a 50. Mick O'Connell drove this above the bar to level at 3 points after 14 minutes. Freeney sent a clever pass to Heffernan, and his shot put Dublin a point ahead. The Kerry goal then had a lucky escape when Heffernan hit the upright low down and the ball went wide. Shots by Freeney and Joyce hit the post and the ball went wide. Then a Whelan shot once again hit a post. Tom Long going through was fouled down in front of the post. Dan McAuliffe sent up the white flag to equalise after 24 minutes. A long ball by Mick O'Connell was grabbed by John Dowling. He was bottled but passed to Sheehy. Pod's high screw kick put Kerry in the lead. In one fierce tussle between backs and forwards, the ball broke loose and Dan McAuliffe got his boot to it and the leather was in the net. Paddy Flaherty, the Dublin goalkeeper, went off injured. Meehan, the sub-goal man, was not long on duty when he made a wonderful save from Dowling. Just before the whistle, Dowling crashed wide at short range.
The half ended with Kerry 4 up, 1-5 to 4 points. Kerry would have to survive the concession of 2 second-half goals to progress.
When the teams reappeared, Cathal O'Leary, Kerry father, Cork mother, was on for Dublin.
Mick O'Connell remembers Cathal O'Leary and the tussles he had with him on various occasions.
Cathal, now you're talking, not marking me. Cathal wasn't a marker either. Cathal, Jim McKeever, players like that, they went for the ball. Cathal was a great fielder. He was. He wouldn't be a great kicker. We played often together. We didn't foul each other once. And so be it. I remember some of those games. Cathal had very good games, but so had I. And I think that would be the ideal if both teams on the field played very good football. Isn't it better for spectators and better for players and better for individuals? And I think that's the ideal, because you're beaten. That doesn't mean that you're any inferior. It could be 29 points to 28.
Shortly after the restart, Mick O'Connell beat three opponents in a jump for position and sent over the bar. Paddy Sheehy added another. A great dash by Dave Geaney saw him pass to Dan McAuliffe, and the Dwa man was again on the mark. Paddy Sheehy rounded his man shortly afterwards, and when the white flag waved, Kerry were 8 points ahead after 13 minutes. At this stage, the game changed. Bad marking left Haughey loose, and from close in, he banged to the net. When Freeney added a point in the next minute, Dublin were only 4 points behind, with 9 minutes to go. Short, clever passes by the Dublin forwards left Freeney in possession close in. He rammed home a goal, and Dublin were only a point behind, with 5 minutes remaining. Kerry broke away. Tom Long broke through and pointed.
The Kerry lead stood at 2 points entering the closing minutes. It was an advantage they maintained to the end, the result being 110 to 25.
After as thrilling and pulsating a football match as I have ever seen, Kerry defeated Dublin, the reigning champions. Kerry's experimental defence rose to the occasion. Dublin lost because they had no answer to high, firm fielding. Mick O'Connell gave a scintillating display.
51 years later, Kerry supporter Liam Shanahan regards O'Connell's display in that semi-final as his finest hour.
His greatest individual performance ever was 1959 against Dublin in the semi-final. That day, he took over the whole field. He played so well that day, it's said the Dublin fans clapped him off the field.
Fellow Kingdom fan Mick Allen also remembers the stint put in by O'Connell that afternoon.
The All-Ireland semi-final of 59. I'll never forget the display of O'Connell that day. He was marking this Foley, and this Foley was the man that played the ball. And Connell would beat any fella that would play the ball.
Another vital section for Kerry was the half-forward line. Kerry's front row was held scoreless. I thought this was due to the illegal tackling of the Dublin fulls. Kerry's weakest point is bad positioning by the backs. The old assertion that Kerry in Croke Park and Kerry anywhere else bear no resemblance came true again.
Paul Russell, six times All-Ireland winner with Kerry, was by now a columnist with the Kerryman newspaper. He believed the win demonstrated again the effectiveness of pure Gaelic football as played mainly in the air and emphasised the value of the long flowing pass. The sole sour note from the semi-final was a shoulder injury to Jim Brosnan.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Galway would be Kerry's All-Ireland final opponents. The tribesmen qualified for the decider with a 111 to 14 defeat of Down. Sean Murphy knew Kerry were in for a tough encounter with the tribesmen.
Galway were, and still are, a team very skillful, very well trained, well motivated. I thought that was superb. Any team with Purcell, Jack Mann, go right back. Over the years, the personalities on that Galway team meant that they were a very, very difficult proposition to play.
A fortnight ahead of the final, Kerry's prospects received a huge blow.
Jim Brosnan, who dislocated a shoulder in the semi-final, will not be fit. He was examined by a surgeon last weekend and afterwards made the decision not to play.
Nonetheless, that semi-final display against Dublin meant confidence amongst the Kingdomites was high ahead of the final.
The belief is widely and strongly held in this county that Kerry will beat Galway. Some go as far to maintain the team will win with ease. This great confidence has been conditioned by the display of the team in the recent semi-final against Dublin and the resounding victory which the most competent critics had regarded as an impossibility. Next to Dublin, no team in Ireland receives better coaching, indulges in such intensive preparation as Galway. The Kingdom's prospects are not improved by the absence through injury of Jim Brosnan, a frightful loss. Galway too have suffered from injuries, but they have ample replacements. Kerry have not. I am not going so far as to say that Galway would beat Kerry, but the danger signals have been hoisted.
Kerry trainer Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan was in agreement when he gave his pre-match views to the Kerryman.
A number of Kerrymen who were at the Galway Down semi-final seem to think that this Galway team is a shadow of its former self and a Kerry victory is a foregone conclusion. I am definitely inclined to take the opposite view.
Dr. Raymond goes on to quote a friend of his who lauded Galway's semi-final efforts, and Dr. Raymond hoped this sober and solid view should shock the complacency that might tend to develop in all our minds when we hear the opposite opinion. With Jim Brosnan a forced absentee for the final, at least one change was required. Kerry made two. Tighe Lyons started in place of Brosnan. At the other end of the field, Tim Lyons was brought in. Lyons started ahead of Moss O'Connell, whom he replaced in the semi-final. Lyons' inclusion meant Mick O'Dwyer moved to wing back. In 1959, Tom Long was playing at his first senior All-Ireland final. Pre-match, Long found himself alongside Tighe Lyons in the dressing room. Long was about to discover the effect that pressure had on certain people.
Strangely enough, in the first All-Ireland senior, I remember, I was dressing in the dressing room beside Tighe Lyons, who was a seasoned campaigner that time and had great expectations of him, like, you know. But I just happened to be tugging out beside him, and for some strange reason I thought he looked excited, and I thought I saw a tremor in the hands. And I said something to him, God almighty, what's wrong with you? If it were me, it would be something different. I was non-entity at the time, it didn't matter, there were no expectations. So he said something like this, when you were around for a long time too, you'll be like this. But it was true for them, I suppose. The longer you go on, the greater expectations and the more nervous you feel about it.
A tight first half against Galway gave no indication of what was to follow.
Now that we're off and running here for the 1959 All-Ireland Final, and it promises to be a great spectacle here between Kerry and Galway. And this ball is driven up over to the far side. It's pulled there by the Galway man. Sean Murphy drives it long side for John Dowling. At full forward, he turns and he shoots over the bar. Weezy, great score from John Dowling.
Great score from John Dowling. Moved into full forward. The end for Sean Murphy. The campman came out, drove the ball in, went into Dowling. Dowling coming around with the right leg. Bang, over the bar. Great start for Kerry.
The same player doubled Kerry's advantage as the Kingdom moved into a two-point lead within 3 minutes.
A long ball by Mick O'Dwyer was well fielded by Dowling, whose shot put Kerry 2 points up in the third minute.
Less than 2 minutes later, Kerry found themselves trailing.
And now then, this chance coming in here, and it's for Galway. The Kerry defence under pressure. And Frank Ivers going through, and he's buried it into the back of the net for a Galway goal.
Yeah, great goal by Frank Ivers. He went through last position of the ball. The ball hopped in front of him. He went right through the Kerry defence. The ball hopped. He put it at first time. Johnny Cullity waved the tap and goal. Troops out to his left. Cupped at his fingers of the ball. Bang, into the back of the net. Great goal by Galway.
Well, that was one fantastic goal, definitely.
From a free, Kerry's Dan McAuliffe levelled the scores in the 10th minute. Galway 1 goal, the Kingdom 3 points. Then
Dowling gets it again for Kerry. Out to Paddy Sheehy. Paddy Sheehy drives it across. Tom Long breaks it down there. Rishi, but the spell is a wide ball.
Yeah, nice ball again by John Dowley. He's got that ball there. He's captain Kerry in 55. Gave it out to Paddy Sheehy. And Paddy Sheehy sitting across the face of the goal. Tom Long tried to get it, but the ball went wide there. The West Kerry men did all he could to get his hands in, but no good with over his leg.
A close shave for Galway, and the Westerners made Kerry pay for their near miss.
Purcell got possession, but on being tackled, he punched high over the bar for the lead after 15 minutes. Galway hit a free in the 21, which Purcell pointed.
Kerry now trailed by 2 points, entering the closing minutes of the opening period.
And here's Dave Keeney now on the ball. Dave Keeney, the help is coming. And this draw driven inside to the square. Galway goalkeeper, he's lost it. John Dowling has robbed him there. Rishi, this is going to be close in free.
Dan McAuliffe is going to pop this over the bar there, because Dan McAuliffe, who took the ball from Dave Gainey, the ball went in, the goalkeeper fumbled it inside, and John Dowling, the full forward, he was pulled, he was dragged, and Dan McAuliffe, the man from Doar, popped the ball over the bar.
The Kingdom were now in search of the equalising score.
And in the 28th minute, from a free by Tighe Lyons, the scores were level.
Kerry doing very well so far. Gathered by Mick O'Connell in the middle of the field. A low kick pulled down inside there by Frankie McDonough. And this ball is near the sideline. And it's Sean Murphy once again who's driving inside for John Dowling. Sean Murphy, we should wing back to him extremely well as this half-time whistle is gone.
Sean Murphy's having an absolute blinder, Gary. 1, 2 to 5 points at half-time. And Mick O'Connell in the middle of the field took them very, very well. But Sean Murphy, the man from camp, he's having an absolute storm-up.
The sides were tied at half-time. Kerry 5 points, Galway 1-2. Kerry ran amok in the second half, holding Galway to 2 points in the process.
Well, we're back here for second half action. It's all still to play for here. And the 1959 All-Ireland Final, the second half is on. And straight away it's Paddy Sheehy going through. Tighe line going through now, Weishi. That's going to be a free in, and it's going to be taken by Tighe line himself.
Yes, indeed. Tighe line is going to pop this over the bar there, the star of the 1955 win over the unbeatable so-called Dublin machine. And Tighe line came in the corner today. Came up, popped the ball over the bar. I snapped the carry.
Well, just in front of the new Hogan stand, the ball is driven inside again. Mick O'Connell grabs it for Kerry. Plays it outside the Tighe line. That looks good. The goalkeeper comes out. He's lost possession. There's a real scrap for possession back there, reaching the full back line.
There is indeed, but the goalkeeper did very well. Farrell in the Galway goal came out here. The high ball came in from Tighe line. And he came out, punched the ball here. Kerry's still in possession, though.
Kerry has possession again. Tighe line just wide, and that's a close effort gone in there.
Yes, indeed. Gary Tighe line got the ball turned around, gave it out to Barry Sheehy. Barry Sheehy had the opportunity to put a point, but pulled it back very badly wide. He'd be disappointed with that.
Galway attacking. Johnny Connolly has come out, and I don't know how that one stayed out just on the line. How come that was the Galway goal?
That was a very lucky escape for Kerry. The ball was pitched across the face of the goal. Connolly came out and cleared the ball. The ball was split out of his hands, but across the face of the goal, it was eventually kicked wide. I can tell you, the Killarney Legion man will be happy to see that go wide, because it very nearly finished into the back of the net.
Well, a let off there for Kerry, and Galway attacking. This is Young going through the right half forward, and he tips it over the bar.
Following that equalising score by Galway, the game belonged to Kerry.
Tom Long punched into the Galway goalmouth, and Dan McAuliffe shot to the net. In the next minute, O'Dwyer had a point.
The Kingdom were not letting up.
Kerry going through, O'Farrell has lost it on the goal, and it's gone in. The green flag is up, and it's a goal for Kerry.
Yes, indeed, a big high ball came into the square, Johnny. Farrell, the Galway goalkeeper, got the ball, and Dan McAuliffe, the doorman, came in, and he hit Farrell away to his shoulder on the goal line. He sends it over the ball. You can hit the goalkeeper. He hit him fair and square. Goal for Kerry.
Dan McAuliffe's second goal of the afternoon had Kerry well on their way to All-Ireland number 19. The icing on the cake came in the final minutes.
Gary McMahon came on instead of Dave Geaney, and he was not long in action when he got the ball and an angle shot reached the net with 5 minutes remaining.
Sam Maguire was coming back to the Kingdom thanks to a 3-7 to 1-4 victory. It was a win made all the more remarkable considering.
Kerry won under a great handicap in the opening minutes. Captain Mick O'Connell injured knee, which left him limping and caused his eventual retirement.
Sean Murphy was worried that O'Connell's demise would lead to Kerry's also.
That was a worry. When I saw Mick O'Connell going on, I was dumbfounded, to be quite honest. I found it very difficult to see a Kerry team at that stage winning without Mick O'Connell, but they did. It shows that very often that it's a team rather than a personality that wins these games.
A knee injury was not the sole ailment O'Connell had to contend with on the day of the final.
That's the I mentioned already. Yeah. And for another reason, I shouldn't have been playing at all that day, because I got a lot of waitings. I gone for practice that week. I had a sore throat. Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan, trainer, gave me some tablets that morning. I could hardly swallow a speech, but you cannot pull out at the last minute. That's another thing that often happens, that people don't take into account. One might be very off form from a medical point of view. On the day, you could have, like I had tonsillitis that day. My throat was closed, but I had to go on the field. But I tried, but the twisting of the knee is what put me off the game.
Tim Lyons also had to go off after a quarter of an hour. Man of the match was without doubt Sean Murphy. He has played many great games for his county. Sunday's display surpassed them all.
Gary O'Mahony was in goals when Kerry won the 55 All-Ireland final. He ranks Sean Murphy's display in the 59 decider as one of the greatest.
Sean Murphy in 59. I'd have to go for that.
Why? What stood out?
Well, I thought he took on the whole Galway team himself. There was nothing past him. Every time the ball came down, went back in again. I thought he was terrific that day.
For 1953 netminder Johnny Foley, Sean Murphy's performance in 59 also stands out.
Sean Murphy, 59, because he wasn't beaten for any ball. He was a man by the name of McDonough, I think. But he was great in 53, he was great in 55. But 59 was the best I saw.
Sean Murphy's teammate that day, Mick O'Connell, agrees with that assessment.
I suppose Sean Murphy and right halfback in 1959, he was in the right place at the right time. McDonough of Galway, not Matty McDonough, another Holly McDonough was there. Wherever Sean was, he seemed to The ball seemed to be magnetised to him. Left and right, Sean had a beautiful kick, left and right. On that day, I think that was a wonderful display.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
The 1959 decider has since been dubbed the Sean Murphy final, but he was not the only one standout performer in a Kerry jersey that day.
Paul Sheehy had a distinguished hour. So had Tom Long and Johnny Colity. Colity bought off some wonderful close-range saves, which would have beaten a less reliable goalman. Surprise packet of the Kerry team was John Dowling. He was much too good for Meath, and I believe this was the first nail in the Western coffin.
Kerry supporter Luke Keane believes Tom Long's name can be added to the list of those who excelled in the final of 59.
Tom Long's display that day, of course, also was wonderful. He was switched out from on Frank Ivers, and Ivers was dominating Micheál Connell a little bit, and Tom Long put the shackles on Ivers, and I would rate Tom Long as one of the greatest ever.
1959 is also the year in which Kerry captain Mick O'Connell famously forgot the Sam Maguire, leaving it in the dressing room. 1959 was title number 7 for the famed Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan.
We should not forget Dr. Eamon, who has the astonishing record of having won All-Ireland honours with every team he trained from 1924 to the present.
In the 1950s, Dr. Eamon published a book, The Art and Science of Gaelic Football, which gives an insight into the great man's thinking. Joe O'Meara Herthic, co-author of Kerry football book, Princes of Pigskin, believes Dr. Eamon was a class apart in his approach to the game.
From my point of view, in many ways, the book that Dr. Eamon wrote in the late 50s after he'd trained so many All-Ireland teams from the 20s onwards, it was called The Art and Science of Gaelic Football. And in many ways, the title itself sums up the man that, apart from sending players out on the field to play the game, he was immersed in the whole psychological process and the science of football, and he tried to break down each individual area on the field. The boxes, they've been mentioned, and you couldn't stray from your area, but he was rigid in his enforcement of his view of how Kerry teams should play once they went out in the field. There was another famous story with regard to the relaxation of I suppose, curfews and things like that when they were in collective training. His theory was that when the team was brought in for 2 weeks in Killarney before the All-Ireland, 2 weeks training, that if Paddy Bon Brosnan was liked to go for two or three pints, not most nights, but every few nights, Dr. Eamon wasn't one for having a total blanket ban on drinking and just knocking it out altogether. He would, for the 2 weeks before the All-Ireland, he would allow them, but he would ration back what there would be allowed drink over those 2 weeks, because he felt that it would do more harm than good if you suddenly told a man who likes his few pints, you can't do that. It's my way or the highway. So he didn't do that. I suppose he worked with players in that sense, and he worked with each individual player on an individual basis rather than making rules and guidelines that would cover the whole team. Everyone was treated differently, and maybe that was the secret of his success. I remember Sean Murphy a few years ago saying that such was his presence in the dressing room. If you remember, he would have come in to train All-Ireland winning teams, but prior to that, he may not have been the trainer when they played in the Munster Championship or even the All-Ireland semi-final. On some occasions, like for the 1946 All-Ireland, he came in for that final. There had been a trainer before that. They drew in the final, but he came in for the replay. Such was his influence and such was his standing within Kerry football at the time. But Sean Murphy was saying that he immersed everyone in his psychological process. He dominated the dressing room, and because of that, he had some special effect on the players that really produced the goods on All-Ireland days, and his record stands from the 20s through to 1962, I think, was his last involvement in an All-Ireland winning team.
Kerry's season was still far from over, however. In October, they went on to defeat Down 111 to 9 points in the Gaelic Weekly Tournament final at Croke Park. That match was seen to be important as it came before the US tour. It was feared a Kerry loss to Down would impact on the appeal of the Kerry men's stateside.
When Congress decided that National League winners qualify for a trip to America, Kerry took the competition seriously. They won it after 27 years of failures. Then the players resolved to win the All-Ireland and preserve their unbeaten record. They have done so. Last Sunday, in the Gaelic weekly tournament final at Croke Park, Kerry beat Down, proving themselves unconquered and unconquerable on the playing fields of Ireland. In recent months, Kerry have beaten in turn Dublin, champions of Leinster, Galway, champions of Connacht, and Down, champions of Ulster. Any doubts as to the merits of the Kerry team can now be set at rest. In championship, league and tournaments, they have defeated all comers.
Kerry's trip to America saw them fly from Shannon to New York. There, they defeated New York to win the St. Brendan's Cup final. Kerry won by 211-18 at Gaelic Park in front of a crowd of nigh on 15,000.
Kerry All-Ireland football champions and winners of the National League put the hallmark on their greatness when they defeated a powerful New York selection. Kerry's popularity was evidenced by the record crowd, estimated at 14,000, which had Gaelic Park surrounded by the skyscrapers of the Empire City bursting at its seams. New York had the assistance of three Kerry players. Midfielder Jim Foley, a native of Shankill, Castlemaine, partnered Tom Long at midfield on the Kerry minor team that lost to Dublin by a point in the 1954 All-Ireland final. Rightful forward Tom Moriarty, a native of Tralee, has been a regular on the New York team for the past couple of years. A former Kerry junior, Tom won county championship medals with Rahillies. Full forward Tim Moynihan, a native of Shrone Rathmore, travelled to Ireland with the New Yorkers and played against Dublin at Croke Park in 1956. Kerry are perhaps flattered by the 6 points margin in their favour at the end, but there is no doubt they proved themselves the better ball players in the most hectic phases of the game. From the chances they got, New York should have been in a far better position than merely level at half-time. In the 20th minute of the second half came a wonderful Kerry move, started by Sean Murphy, helped by Dan McAuliffe, and finished for a goal by Paul Sheehy. Kerry's second goal was a beauty of a shot from Tighe Lyne. For long, the issue hung on a thread, and it was only in the closing 5 minutes that the result was put beyond doubt. The footballers of the kingdom have thus captured all the trophies which it is possible for a team to win in the one season.
The talents of certain members of that 1959 All-Ireland winning side extended beyond the playing fields of the GAA. Also, players of that generation and this one are merely continuing a time-honoured trend of, as they say, giving it all for the jersey. Wishy Fogarty.
There's no doubt about it. You hear today, people, what amazes me today when I hear Kerry players say all the time they're putting in and all the sacrifice they're making and everything. Of course they are. But that has always been the way. That has been going on through generations. Kerry players have been cycling miles and miles. They have been out in the fields working. They have been labouring and they'd go away and they'd go training in the evening. They'd leave their farms and they'd leave their homes and they'd go running on their own. That has always been going on. It mightn't have been organised as it is now, but it was certainly going on then. I mean, you even hear today now about Kieran Donaghy and Micheál Quirk, the basketballers playing football with Kerry. Back in the 50s, half the Kerry team were playing basketball. Jerome O'Shea, Maurice Fitzgerald's father, Johnny Culty played basketball with Kerry. Niall Sheehy played basketball with Kerry. Jerome O'Shea played basketball with Kerry. All the great players played basketball that particular time in the 50s and the 60s. So it's not new really. So that was always there. Now so, what's happened now is there's a way more publicity about the whole thing.
King Mico by Jerry Daly. When football lore is discussed and debated and we speak of the stars and how they rated, the complete craftsman with skills of gold was the superb and stalwart Mick O'Connell Bold. A modest man, some thought him quiet, but what an inspiration when in full flight. Triviality he regarded with rightful disdain. He preferred the quiet life to the fast lane. With polished panache he pointed the way. Greatly privileged were all who saw him play. With courage enormous and pride he was driven. His exquisite elegance gave his visions of heaven. He led by example, this midfielder supreme. He was always on top, like Kerry gold cream. The skies he touched with his mighty leap, with ever safe hands, possession he'd keep. A new meaning he gave to the word class, always spot on was his radio-like pass. He showed the way with wisdom and guile, he was the ultimate master of style. A point he could kick from any angle or distance, he always looked regal and kept perfect balance. With a football instinct that amounted to genius, how gloriously he delighted and thrilled us. Now in Croke Park on All-Ireland Day, when the going got tough and some would pray, with effortless grace and example bright, the Kerry hordes he'd set alight. His brilliance inspired us and fulfilled our dreams. It aroused many cheers and loud delight screams. An artiste of grandeur, the truth to tell, was the High King of the midfield, mighty Mick O'Connell.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Next week on The Greatest Day.
Roscommon pulverised Kerry. The performance and results sowed serious seeds of doubt in Kerry minds for the campaign ahead.
The Big Five certainly dropped a bombshell when they made the audacious move of placing Tom Long at full forward.
You had the nucleus, a very strong, experienced nucleus from Johnny Culty in goals, Niall Sheehy, Tim Lyons, Seamus Murphy, Mick O'Dwyer, Tom Long and Mick O'Connell.
When Long, seconds after, again raised the green flag, the game looked as good as over.
Roscommon, who had earlier in the year beaten Kerry by 14 points in Killarney, were to be the All-Ireland final opponents.
There's danger here.